Well, thank you. Really nice to see everyone. Thanks for coming. Yeah, so you know the title of my talk. I think I probably should have disclosed that this is funded by NCI, and the number is on the last slide. I'm going to, in the interest of time, just delve right in. So patient-centered care, as I'm sure all of you are aware, it's really become a central tenet of healthcare reform. And we know that there's a growing, if not grown, body of literature indicating that patient-centered care, including patient involvement and information sharing, shared decision-making, physician empathy and responsiveness, understanding the patient's psychosocial context, these are all important for promoting treatment adherence, and also important for a number of other outcomes, such as patient satisfaction, trust in the physician, et cetera. But we're going to be focused on treatment adherence. Specifically, in the context of prostate cancer, we wanted to examine the role of patient-centeredness in a healthcare decision with significant quality of life and economic consequences. That is, the choice to treat prostate cancer with active surveillance rather than definitive therapy, including surgery, radiation, when it's clinically warranted. You're probably aware of these statistics. It's the most commonly diagnosed non-cutaneous cancer in men. Many men die of the disease, and many more are living with a diagnosis of prostate cancer. When men are diagnosed with the disease, they are facing an oftentimes difficult and stressful decision. They need to choose between a definitive treatment, such as surgery, or different types of radiation, as compared to active surveillance, where the goal here is to monitor the cancer, check for progression, and perhaps at a later date shift over to definitive therapy. Now, historically, very few men have chosen active surveillance, perhaps about 10%. However, the guidelines suggest that it should be considered as appropriate for men with low-risk disease, that is, men with a PSA, a diagnosis of less than 10, biopsy Gleason score of less than or equal to 6, and diagnosed with clinical stage of less than or equal to T2A. Most people would have a lower stage, that is T1C. They're diagnosed when they have an elevated PSA and then a positive biopsy. So you may have noticed in the news and among your colleagues that there's a sharp increase in discussion about and promotion of active surveillance. It's been argued that there has been over-treatment, especially of some sectors, older men, men with significant comorbidity, men with low-grade or low-volume disease. These are men not likely to die of prostate cancer. Now, these issues have surrounded the uncertainty about the survival benefits of definitive treatment. The lack of good clinical data to evaluate whether or not definitive treatment offers a survival advantage has been a serious problem in the field. Also, in addition to, of course, the major costs in terms of quality of life, for example, many definitive treatments are associated with serious risks for very consequential side effects. Impotence, incontinence, rectal discomfort or pain or bleeding. So all of these, in addition to these very serious and potentially avoidable consequences of definitive treatment, we are talking about healthcare reform, and one of the large issues is whether or not we could be saving money by avoiding unnecessary treatment in men with prostate cancer. Okay, so why have we gotten to this point where there might be over-treatment? And you have to appreciate that in the absence of inadequate clinical or molecular markers for differentiating indolent, that is, cancers that are not going to progress, and aggressive cancers in prostate cancer, really physicians have been erring on the side of caution, and as have patients and their families. You know, you have to think about being in this situation. If it's your husband or father, what you would suggest. Now, obviously, there's much discussion about the potential for financial incentive to influence providers' recommendations. They might decide to recommend definitive treatment over the active surveillance. Excuse me. And we also know that there's probably a patient component here, that patient preferences are not based in accurate understandings of the risks associated with definitive treatment, and possibly the overestimate of the advantages for cure associated with definitive treatment. So, there's been a call for tools that the physician can use in order to even the playing field, to show patients that active surveillance is a potentially good option when it's clinically warranted. And so we hypothesized that one of the factors that will matter is the relationship between the patient and the physician and the quality of that relationship. We've hypothesized that trust in the physician, degree to which the physician shares control over the treatment decision-making process, perceived closeness with the physician, and simply not being treated poorly by the physician would be associated with greater influence of the physician's treatment recommendation. And we examined this in specifically in a population who were on active surveillance. So these were 120 men who'd been diagnosed with localized prostate cancer. They were being managed on active surveillance and for an average of about 3 years. We approached them in the waiting room of a comprehensive cancer center, and our sample looks a lot like the population that's in that clinic. So we are low on minorities and low on people with low SES. All right, they completed the paper and pencil questionnaires either in the clinic or took them home and returned them by mail. And we were interested in the following predictors. And so here you can see what we used to measure trust and shared control over treatment decision-making, perceived closeness, and poor treatment by the doctor. We measured influence of treatment recommendations with the following item: how much was your decision influenced by the urologist's or the radiation oncologist's recommendation? And here's really the trick. So when patients are diagnosed with prostate cancer, it's very common. In fact, more often than not, they're going to see more than one physician. And they might see they'll definitely see a urologist, because that's who diagnoses the disease, but they will probably also see a radiation oncologist. They might get a second opinion. And so we allow people to report on their relationships with up to 2 urologists and 2 radiation oncologists. We also had them report on their relationship with their primary care physician. However, although most people did talk to their primary care physician about the prostate cancer, they didn't receive a recommendation for treatment from their PCP. So we didn't include those data in our analyses. We use general estimating equations because of the non-independence of these data. And you'll see that we report the multivariable, the results of the multivariable models with risk ratio. So anything over 1 shows a positive association with the outcome. All right. So you might be curious, okay, who were they seeing? Well, most patients saw more than one physician. 44% saw 2 urologists, and 50% saw at least 1 urologist and at least 1 radiation oncologist. Were they receiving recommendations? Yes, almost 90% received at least 1 recommendation, and 73% were receiving at least 1 recommendation for active surveillance. And then on the other hand, they were also receiving recommendations for active surveillance. 37% received at least 1 for surgery, and 48% received at least 1 for external beam or brachytherapy. All right, so some bivariate relationships, just to give you a sense of what we found. So remembering that people saw more than one doctor, in the instance that they reported that they were quite a bit or very much influenced by the treatment recommendation by a particular physician, their trust in that physician was quite a bit higher than it was if they reported that they were not at all or a little bit influenced by the treatment recommendation. We see that pattern throughout for the 4 predictors. And in some cases, the scores are almost twice as high if they're reporting being influenced by quite a bit or very much influenced by the treatment recommendation. Now, recall that these are all folks who did go on to choose active surveillance. All right, these are the results for the multivariable models, and we computed 4 models, and they're all shown here. In each model, we included 1 of our predictor variables. So the first model is the trust model, and you can see that trust is included. We also included our covariates, that is the type of treatment recommended, whether they were recommended active surveillance, surgery, or radiation, as well as Gleason score and education. And so you can see that trust and closeness and shared decision-making, but not poor treatment by the physician, were all associated with greater likely influence of the treatment recommendation. The recommendation for active surveillance was always associated with greater influence as well. The recommendations for other treatments were not. So in sum, these 3 variables, trust in the physician, closeness with the physician, and the degree to which the physician shared decisional control over the treatment decision, these were all associated above and beyond the type of treatment recommended with influence of the treatment recommendation. We conducted ran a final model in which everything was, all the predictors were included together, and we find that the predictors were independently associated with influence. So it's not that they're all tapping into one sort of central type of construct. They're independently associated with influence of the treatment recommendation. All right, so I want to say a little bit about what this means for prostate cancer care, but also for medical care in general. So in the main tenet of prostate cancer care, although not always abided by, is that this should be a patient-driven decision because of the different profiles of side effects that are associated with definitive treatments, the lack of clinical evidence supporting one treatment over the other. The idea is it's patient-driven and should reflect patient needs and values and preferences. And I was much heartened to see that patient involvement in the treatment decision-making is positively associated with greater influence of the treatment recommendation. If it weren't, we would think that, well, maybe it's patients who are passive who are following the treatment recommendation, or maybe it's physicians who are coercive who have patients who are following the treatment recommendation, but this was not the case. This sort of paints a picture for me that there are relationships where patients and physicians are getting on the same page. Patients are involved in the decision-making, and the recommendation they're receiving from the physician is congruent with potentially their needs and their preferences. So that was good. Now, you know, this is joining a large body of work that shows that patient-centeredness is important for uptake of physician recommendations, which is obviously even much, you know, has greater importance in fields such as, you know, chronic care management, where people need to follow physicians' recommendations for certain drug regimens, lifestyle regimens, HIV medication regimens come to mind as well. And I see this as having a number of implications for practice. One is, yes, we can refocus our attention on the need for perhaps training or an environment that facilitates behaviors among physicians that increase trust and closeness and shared decision making. And the literature is now at a good spot with this, and it's giving us some very concrete behaviors that physicians can practice that are helpful for increasing these qualities, exploring the patient's illness experience, being comforting and caring, involving patients in the decision-making to the extent they want. But this isn't the whole equation. Now, as patient-centeredness becomes more and more central in our practices and in healthcare reform, we start to see that this is a relationship and that how patients behave matters too. And there's more and more focus now on giving patients the tools to be involved in a patient-centered relationship. And so we're seeing very interesting communication tools coming out that teach patients strategies for being more involved in decision-making, asking questions. And we're starting to recognize that self-efficacy and skills for obtaining and understanding and remembering information from medical encounters are potential mediators of patient-centered care experience. And if we bring it back, finally, my last sentence, to prostate cancer care, think about all the money and the resources we've poured into creating decision-making aids over the past 20 years. These have been primarily focused on informing the patient so they can make an informed decision. Well, now we can start to think about potentially reframing these or adding components that are complementary skills for participating in the encounter with the physician and being fully involved in decision making. Here's the funding reference, and thank you very much for your attention. Thank you.